Welcome to the Anti-Woke Podcast. Let's kick it off. Crime and punishment. Well, mostly just crime.
Cry on the Anti-Woke Podcast. Cry on the Anti-Woke Podcast.
The biggest crime story this week was a stabbing rampage in Rockford, Illinois. The victims were white, but the stabber was ethnically ambiguous on the white-Hispanic spectrum, so I don't know how the normies are going to chalk that one up. If the media thought they were going to start up a false narrative about white men being rampage stabbers like they've done with mass shootings, I think they're going to have to wait for the next one. And a lot of this is just a numbers game, like, does your demographic have enough schizophrenics in it to create a steady supply of crazy murderings to go into the media? So look at your skin, whatever color it is, the answer is yes. Unless you're Asian. Asians are always fucking up the program. They don't seem to do enough stabbings. I mean, mass stabbing normally means Muslim in Europe. But America's like, we got Major League Soccer now too. And the stabber, his name was Christian Ivan Soto. Which is like, Soto, that sounds Hispanic. Ivan, that sounds, you know, Eastern, maybe even Northern European. So his name kept it ambiguous. ABC World News Tonight just called him Christian Soto. I was like, okay, that keeps it more clear. And the actual crime was pretty crazy. This guy went to a friend's house, smoked some weed at the friend's house, and then just went crazy. Killed the friend, maybe got someone else in that house, started going down the street and just going into houses and stabbing anyone he saw. Went into a house that had three high school girls, killed one of them, a 15-year-old. Makes me think, I was over at a buddy's house once, hot tubbing, and his neighbor came over and he had schizophrenia. And I was talking to him, it was all cool, and then this neighbor pulled out a pipe, took a hit of weed, and it was just word salad. I mean, people say the phrase word salad, but this was like literally word salad. But he wasn't violent, so YMMV. So that crime was a major story on the network news at least two of the nights this week. A different crime got one night, which was someone got pushed in front of a subway train in New York. And, you know, they showed the picture of the perp and the victim and let you draw your own conclusions. The perp was a black guy. I mean, was there any doubt? I don't know if I've ever seen a not be a black guy when someone gets pushed in front of a subway train. And then I think if it had been a woman, it probably would have been a news story for more than one night, but the victim was a man in his 50s. And he looked Jewish, and his last name was Volz, V-O-L-Z. So I went on Google, started typing in Volz, and it suggested to me, is Volz a Jewish name? And it was German Jewish. But I think, you know, normies in Ohio are like, white man, pushed in front of a train. But I think Jews in New York are like, oh, they got another one of us. Who's they? I'm not saying who they is. And later in this podcast, I'm going to talk about how the internet is replacing local news. But if you live in New York, like, your local crime news is the national news, so they don't have anything to worry about. Because another crime this week was college-age white women in New York were being punched in the face. Like, hot ones. I saw a collage of, like, 20 women who got punched in the face. Every one of them was hot. I mean, if you're just going to randomly go up to strangers in New York City and punch them in the face, I mean, you can choose anything. Whatever. I guess it wouldn't be the last demographic I would ever punch in the face wouldn't be a smoking hot white woman. I don't know. Anti-woke podcast does not abide. Anyways, the story was on the internet, like, on Wednesday, because these girls are on TikTok, and they were making TikTok videos like, someone just came up to me and punched me in the face, and I fell on the ground, and I've got a concussion. And the Philip DeFranco show was talking about it on YouTube, and they played a bunch of these TikTok videos in a row, and I'm like, come on, what did the perp look like? But, you know, a 20-year-old white woman knows you don't say the words black man. But just like pushing someone in front of the subway train, this is, you know, it's obvious there's only for whatever reason, one group of people that would do this kind of thing. I mean, it's obviously a hate crime. No one's talking hate crime. You know, reverse the races, blah, blah. And so the internet knew about this story on Wednesday, so I went to the nightly news on Thursday. Are you gonna talk about it? They didn't talk about it. And then Friday night, ABC World News Tonight, which is the woke one, they actually got the story in under the wire. NBC Nightly News did not make it on the weeknight show. But it turns out there's at least three black men going around punching college-age white women in the face. And the World News Tonight put up, like, the police spokesman who's like, there's, you know, it's just a coincidence. There's nothing going on here. We can't find any pattern. I mean, the cops ain't that dumb. They know what's going on just when the cameras are off. I don't know about the normies watching the news. I mean, my woke buddy would watch the news and draw zero conclusions, I am sure. But it's like, hello, hate crime, sexual tension, you know, next best thing to rape. America is not racist at all against black people, but if the media sets up a false narrative about how America's racist, what do you expect? So, a while back, a lot of cities and institutions stopped listing race when they're like, be on the lookout for this kind of criminal. Like, they used to be, you know, race, gender, and general age range, like, because those are the most useful things to know what to look out for. Anyways, they removed race from that list. Like, I know San Francisco stopped listing race when they talked about criminals. Columbia University, which is in New York City, when there was, like, sexual predators on campus, they stopped listing race because the race was always the same one, and that made them uncomfortable. And so these girls on TikTok, I mean, they got that memo. And it made me think of this classic Family Guy skit, so I'll give you a clip of that.
And it's my second favorite holiday, right after Pretend Not to Notice People's Race Day. Have you seen Reggie around?
Which one is Reggie?
Today he's wearing yellow pants, yellow shirt, yellow hat, yellow shoes. He's got a gold tooth, diamond earring. He's got that big necklace with a dollar sign on it. He's always grabbing his crotch when he's telling a story, like the one about when he found out his mother is really his grandmother.
Could you be more specific?
Let's see. He always wears cheap cologne, drives a Mercury Cougar with a crown on the dashboard, never pays his alimony. He's extremely cut for a guy who never works out. Oh, there he is. Thanks anyway. Hey, Reggie!
And the punchline to that skit is, when the guy walks in, he's white. And so, New York is a blue state. It would never vote for a Republican for president, basically no matter how bad crime gets. But there are reps from the state in the House of Representatives that come from districts where if there's a big enough crime wave and Republican swing, well, the last time around it actually swung the Republicans into controlling the House of Representatives. And so that's kind of the question. Are Republicans going to control the House again? It probably comes down to maybe five different representative races in New York. So subway crimes may affect that. They now have National Guard in subway stations, but I think they just, like, check people's bags for guns. I think they're checking, like, old Jewish ladies' purses for guns. I mean, it's stupid because you can't profile people based on, you know, age, gender, but in particular race. But there's this easy way to tell who the criminals on the subway are. They're the ones who jump the turnstile. I mean, if you're about to kill someone, are you going to pay for your ticket? But the National Guard, I think, has been specifically told, do not stop turnstile jumpers. Basically, do not stop criminals. I mean, they're there for show. I mean, so, you know, maybe there's a little less crime because you see them around. But the other kind of crime that's in the media in New York, it hasn't broken through to the national news yet, but it's squatters. Because in that state, they give squatters pretty much the same rights as renters, who have a lot of rights. So a couple cases were in the news. I think one or maybe both of them were a situation where some parents died and, like, left a house or an apartment to their kid, and then the kid didn't get there fast enough. And then squatters started living there, and in one case, the lady tried to kick the squatters out, and the police arrested the lady. And in the other case, the squatters murdered the lady who came to kick them out. So we'll see if that kind of stuff affects the elections. And then the biggest story this week was a container ship hit the bridge in Baltimore, knocked it over. But I don't think there was any crime involved or DEI or woke anti-woke. So we'll stick a pin in that one. Oh, right. And P. Diddy, a.k.a. Puff Daddy, had a couple of his mansions raided by, I think, the FBI. And there's been some sexual assault allegations against him. I think a girl said that he raped her when she was 17 and recorded the video. We don't know. I mean, but that was like 25 years ago. Maybe they're looking for that tape. I mean, the situation reminds me of kind of what happened to Russell Brand, that right-wing comedian, pundit guy, where basically there's just, their lifestyle is tons of drugs and alcohol and having sex with, you know, 18, 19, 20-year-olds. And that's all legal, well, except for the drugs. But if you're having sex with 50, 18-year-olds a year, you're going to get caught with someone under. And if there's drugs and alcohol mixed in with, you know, 51s that are consensual, someone's going to not really, you know, going to change their mind afterwards or probably during. And then if you're rich and famous, you're going to get in the news. There's been some infighting over at the Daily Wire. Candace Owens, their black female host, was going on Twitter saying stuff that, you know, maybe had some sympathy for the Palestinians. And it looks like Ben Shapiro, one of the founders of the Daily Wire, ain't having that. He's Jewish and very militant about his support of Israel. And Candace seems to take her Christianity pretty seriously. And I think she said some stuff to Ben Shapiro on Twitter, maybe can't serve God and money at the same time. And like, at the end of their little argument back and forth, her last retort was, "Christ is King." And then I think some pro-Israel groups started saying that the term or the phrase "Christ is King" is anti-Semitic. And so that was trending on Twitter for a while. I saw that. I was like, why is "Christ is King" trending? And I'm on the side of the Jews in Israel, but there definitely is a lot of anti-Semitic creep, or, you know, what is anti-Semitic creeps. Mark Dice on YouTube was talking about it. He was saying that anti-Semitic used to mean you don't like the Jews, but now anti-Semitic means the Jews don't like you. And I was trying to turn that around and use it for racism. Like, racism used to mean you don't like black people, but to have it mean that now black people don't like you doesn't quite work, because it's white women Karens who, you know, that's how it comes the other direction. Racism used to mean you don't like black people. Now it means woke white women don't like you, which doesn't flow quite as nicely. So Candace is out at the Daily Wire. Ben Shapiro went around doing some interviews about it and was acting pretty weaselly. He's like, "I won't discuss it." And then, you know, was sounding like a lawyer who was going around the truth. And I think Candace can't talk about it. Mark Dice was talking about NDC's non-disparagement clause. It's like an NDA. Non-disclosure agreement. But anyways, you sign a non-disparagement clause when you get a job at a media place, and that means when you leave, you can never say anything bad about the company, ever. And if there's a dispute, it goes to arbitration, which is all behind closed doors, can't take it to court, where everything is public record. And this kind of explains Tucker Carlson. Whenever he starts talking about Fox News, where he used to work, it's glowing. He just has nothing but good things to say about them. And it's probably because there's a bunch of money on it. And the guys on the podcast of the Lotus Eaters were talking about it. And they were like, you know, is this where the anti-woke, or, you know, the non-mainstream media turns on itself, eats its own, and falls to pieces? And I don't know, we'll see. But they were saying that that's what happened to all the kind of anti-woke people in the UK. But it's a little different. The people he brings up as examples, he brings up Tommy Robinson, Lauren Southern, Count Dankula, someone else. But Tommy Robinson, he wasn't an internet guy. He was like doing stuff in person. I think he kept going to this trial where a group of Muslim men had been raping underage white girls. And the judge is like, you can't be, you know, standing outside the courthouse drawing attention to this. And Tommy Robinson was like, you can't stop me. And they threw Tommy Robinson in jail for a long ass time. I looked him up. Now he has a podcast, but, you know, back in the day, he was like physical action. And then Lauren Southern, I think she was riding around on some boats where they were trying to turn back migrants back to Africa, or trying to go to Italy or something. Like, I don't think she was doing it, but she was on the boat, maybe acting as a reporter, she would call it herself. But she got put on a terrorism watch list, and like, I think her husband and her baby like lived in Australia, and Australia wouldn't let her into the country. I think she can get in now. And Count Dankula, he taught his little dog to do the Heil Hitler salute. But I think he's on YouTube. He doesn't talk politics anymore. He's on YouTube. They did throw him in jail for a little while. But anyways, that stuff's a little different than what's going on for right-wingers in America. I mean, here they kick you off the internet, but they don't throw you in jail. Thank goodness for the First Amendment. And here it's like, oh, California's too woke? Well, you can move to Texas. It's good to have a big country with different, whatever, mentalities in different parts. It's almost like we're a bunch of countries. I guess let's say this. If the government could throw Daily Wire people in jail, it probably would. And then that probably would break up the gang. And then maybe it was because of this, but Blocked and Reported was talking about Candace Owens and her history in a podcast recently. And for me, Candace Owens is fine, I guess. I don't listen to her, and then that's how I like it. I think I listened to her once, and she said, I was like, that thing you said ain't true. That thing you said ain't true. That ain't true. I turned it off and never gone back. And maybe she's right on now. I don't know. But the crazy part is, according to Blocked and Reported, how Candace Owens, like, became anti-woke or whatever was she got in an online dispute with Zoe Quinn, which, you know, you don't know who that is. I wouldn't know who that is, except that now we're in Gamergate 2.0. Anyway, Zoe Quinn was the girl at the beginning of the original Gamergate. Basically just a nobody. She cheated on her boyfriend with a gaming journalist. And then gamers are like, you're sleeping around to get good reviews for the game you're working on. And then the gaming magazines are like, you gamers are racist for attacking a woman for sleeping around. And like, that was the start of Gamergate. But apparently, like, Zoe Quinn and Candace Owens got in maybe a Twitter fight or something back in the day. And then Candace Owens is like, your friends are bullying me online, and you're woke. I now hate all woke people, because you're all bullies. And I don't think Candace Owens was related to Gamergate at all. It was just, I guess, a coincidence, and a lot of stuff was happening online back in that little time period. You can interact with me on Spotify by clicking on something. This week, Chopper22 said, I saw this stat about how hard it is to have and maintain a legit podcast. If you make it over a year, you're in the top 99-some percent. Congrats, you are way ahead. Thanks, Chopper22. I think for me, the trick is talking to myself is addictive, and I have the time. And last week, I was listening to my podcast after I made it and published it, and it was starting to bore me. I think maybe I was talking about politics for like 50 minutes or something. So I just went in and I cut out the last 20 minutes of whatever I was talking about. And according to Spotify, 22 people downloaded the podcast that I originally uploaded. And then, you know, the rest of you got the shorter version. So if last week, if it was an hour and a half long, you got the one that I thought was kind of boring. And if it was an hour and 10 minutes, I think, then you got the one that most people got. And before I started this podcast, I was doing YouTube. You can look at it, Off Grid Oregon. It was not a political one. It was like homemade this and that. And there's this thing. It's not how many people were watching me on YouTube, because when I started, no one was, and that was fine. But at some point, YouTube turned on the spigot, and the number of views was just going up and up and up and up. And then they turned off the spigot, and the number of views went down, down, down. And so, you know, after it went up and then back down, I think it was higher than it was initially, but there's something about it. It just doesn't feel the same. And I was like, screw this. And I quit. Now, editing videos for YouTube is a thing that sucks, that, you know, making a podcast is way less painful. In fact, it's fun. But I was making podcasts and like 10 people were listening to me and that was fine. And then it got up to about 250 people about 6 months ago. And now it's down to about 150 to 175. And I kind of feel that same trajectory thing where it just, you know, you're not excited to go look and see how your podcast did, which is part of the fun. I kind of tell myself if it stays over 100, hey, that's a bunch of people listening to your blather. So if it goes under 100, I don't know how I'm going to feel. I mean, it's an arbitrary number, but I've kind of set it in my mind now. It'd be hard to change that. And the tools that Spotify gives you don't really give you any input on what people are liking or not liking. I think I asked listeners once and they were like, we like it all. I mean, if you don't like it, you're not going to reply. I think I'm going to try and do my sections more in order. I'm thinking crime, Disney, politics. And I went and created some AI-generated songs to designate like a section coming up. I guess you already heard that if you've gotten this far. But there you go, TMI. After I recorded all that, I got a second interaction on Spotify. Philip says, Candace Owens and her Christ is King shtick. I know you're an atheist and all, and also love Jews, but as a Christian, I think she needs to sit down and read John 4:22. Thanks for the comment, Philip. Shoot, I think that means I need to read John 4:22 because I don't know if that's a for or against or what. But it sounds like this Christ is King thing is something my listeners may be interested in, so I went and looked up the actual tweet. So Ben Shapiro said something like, Candace, if you feel that taking money from the Daily Wire gets between you and God, by all means, quit. And then Candace Owens said, you are utterly out of line for suggesting that I cannot quote biblical scripture. The Bible is not about you. And then in a separate tweet, Christ is King. Disney and pop culture. So I used to do a weekly movie box office roundup, and then I've kind of stopped doing that. I mean, for one, there used to be a lot of Disney Marvel movies and other ones, you know, Disney cartoons to talk about. But also, I like to put the show out on Monday. It just seems to me like if I was listening to a podcast, I would like to know that every Monday morning I had that podcast, you know, kind of in my back pocket and I could listen to it whenever I had time at work that week. But so the numbers for the movies come out Sunday afternoon, and I'd always have to like basically have the whole thing done and then add the little bit about the movies at the last second, which was a pain. So then I just, there isn't good movies to talk about. It's a pain. I stopped doing it. But my guess is that you, dear listener, don't care that much. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about movies probably today, a week late. Basically, just whenever I feel like it. So a couple weeks ago, a couple movies were new. There was a Christian movie and a lesbian movie. The Christian one was called Cabrini. The lesbian movie was called Love Lies Bleeding. Love Lies Bleeding stars Kristen Stewart, the girl from Twilight, and some Bull Dyke actress who is, she's supposed to be like really super up and coming, except this lesbian movie just flopped. So I don't know if she's really up and coming. But anyways, the Christian movie flopped, and so did the lesbian movie. And so there was a lesbian movie called Bottoms, came out maybe 6-9 months ago, which also flopped. So anyways, that's just part of the culture war there. If you make a lesbian movie, it doesn't guarantee success. I don't know if it guarantees failure, but the two that I can think of failed. And I think critics, you know, some critics judge a movie on representation, and so they would give any lesbian movie high marks. Otherwise, I don't think they were that good. I mean, you know, maybe the world's just waiting for a good lesbian movie and no one is making that. Maybe lesbians can't make good movies. Then the Christian movie Cabrini, it's not a lesbian movie, but it's about a woman, and it's Roman Catholic. And, well, I don't know why. I think it was considered decently good, or actually good, but it flopped. I think there was an idea that, okay, for a while there was no movies for Christians. Or there was one every 10 years, you know, Passion of the Christ, and then wait 15 years after that for the next one. And then Angel Studios started crowdfunding the TV show The Chosen, and that was doing good, I guess. And then they started doing movies, and they did that anti-child trafficking movie that just cleaned up at the box office last summer. But anyways, I think there's too many Christian movies now. Christians want to go out and support Christian movies, but if there's a new one every week, eventually they get tired of it, just like any audience gets tired of whatever. I mean, you know, blacks don't have time to watch every black movie, etc. I've been thinking about Barbenheimer now that it's been long enough to look back at that. So that was when the movie Barbie and Oppenheimer, they came out the same week. And normally when movies come out, they cannibalize each other and, you know, they make the other one not be a hit. But this was the weird case where it made both of them be a hit. And so in the box office, or in the theaters, Barbie made just under $1.5 billion and Oppenheimer made just under $1 billion. So Barbie wins, right? And Barbie was super diverse. Like, there was a bunch of different Barbies of all everythings, including trans. Although the main Barbie and the main Ken were still white. Funny how that works. And then Oppenheimer, that's Christopher Nolan. He's British. I think that's how he gets away with it. He's just like, I want to make it the way that it happened. And then it's like, oh, the building of the atomic bomb was not diverse. But if you're woke, you're like, well, our movie made more money and more kids went to it. So, you know, we're molding the minds of the next generation. But Barbie seems to me kind of like a 12 Years a Slave, which was a movie, you know, obviously about slavery that was like a media darling at the time. I think it won some Oscars, but I don't think it was actually a good movie. I mean, everyone said it was a fabulous movie. Like, what else are you going to say? But then you see, you know, are people still watching 12 Years a Slave? Like, you know, no one's watching that shit. And it's because it wasn't actually a good movie. It was, you know, it was good for virtue signaling, to say you were a good white person to go watch it. But the test of time is that people continue watching the movie. Same thing happened with a movie called Moonlight. Maybe 5 years ago, it won Best Picture. It was like a gay black movie that no one is talking about or watching anymore since either. And it's not necessarily the subject matter. It's just, did you actually make a good movie that people want to watch? And the answer is no. Virtue signaling will only get you so far. Now, some people did like Barbie. But anyway, so Apple sells movies. I think this is the, I mean, I would never pay, but it's the replacement for like video stores. Like, if you want to own a movie in the new digital world. And so Barbie and Oppenheimer were both on that charts when they, you know, stopped being theaters only and you could buy them, I guess, to own forever until big tech says that's racist and takes it away from you. You're like, oh, you thought you bought that? Sorry. Looking at you, Oppenheimer. Makes me want to say Weimanheimer for some reason. Or maybe it's Weimaraner. But anyways, Barbie hit that chart high and then just disappeared. Whereas Oppenheimer hit that chart, and I think it's still on it, like months later. So when you're anti-woke and you're looking for a win, a lot of times you just got to take doesn't have a lot of wokeness in it as the win. And it looks like, by that criteria, we won. Couple things about Disney this week. There was a lawsuit where Disney was fighting Florida, and they settled it out of court. I think Disney lost a little bit more than they won, but it was pretty much a wash. And this is from the thing where Disney jumped into politics when Florida passed a law saying kindergarten teachers shouldn't be talking about sexuality with their students. And then the media called that the Don't Say Gay Bill. And I think the way Disney is spinning this case is they're like, ah, see, it's fine if we jump into politics. And then behind closed doors, let's never jump into politics ever again. Like, I don't know what result would have had to be to encourage CEOs of other companies to think that it would be a good idea to get super woke and jump into politics, but that was not the result. I think CEOs got the message, stay out. And then I think Disney shareholders have been voting for the new board of directors, and everyone involved with Disney management has circled the wagons and said, you know, they're woke, they're out, they're proud, vote for them, it's all good, Disney's doing great. George Lucas, who created Star Wars and doesn't like what Disney is doing, he bowed down and said, oh yeah, we got to keep that board, they're awesome. Stuff like that. And this was because some anti-woke investors were trying to steer the Disney ship a different direction. And I think maybe some other big institutional investors have voted with their shares to say, yeah, we don't like this woke stuff. I don't think it's enough to actually throw out the board members. Whatever. We'll see on April 3rd. We get the results. And Gamergate 2.0 has been kept at a simmer. Some company called Black Girl Gamers has been fighting with gamers on Twitter. And Black Girl Gamers, I think they make video games, but they also act as consultants to come in and give you the DEI-ify stamp of approval on your big budget video games. And they've got, you know, the CEO has made videos saying, we're hiring black women. We got a job opening. We're hiring black women. Please apply. And then people on Twitter are like, that's against the law. You can't, you know, racially discriminate in your hiring. And then Black Girl Gamers is like, anyone who says that, we're going to sue you, which is catnip to Twitter people. Like, hey, everyone, they say they're going to sue for defamation or whatever. So anyways, that got everyone to have some fun. And it's like, how do you tell who's winning the culture war? Like, you know, if you go to Black Girl Gamers, they do not let normal people comment. I can't comment. So I think whichever side is not letting people comment is losing. And so that situation has made other woke people in gaming get out over their skis. The head of global marketing for Xbox said something about white guys because of it. And I think she had to shut down her Twitter account for a while because everyone's calling her a racist. See, I don't know exactly, but the woke side used to win all these fights, and now the anti-woke side is winning. I think that's because Elon Musk bought it, and like the previous owners of Twitter would turn some dials somehow to make the woke side win, and they're not doing that now. But I'm not sure. But, you know, if you can get video game players to be aware of and fight anti-white racism, I mean, that's a huge group of white males who are about to be in control of everything. They need to throw off their false consciousness and wake up. Here's a good word I learned. Physiognomy. P-H-Y something something. Here's the definition from AI. Physiognomy refers to the assessment of a person's character or personality based on their outer appearance, particularly their facial features. There was a girl on a new podcast I've been listening to called Pirate Wires who said that. And that podcast is all right. If you're looking for another one, Pirate Wires, it's like tech meets the culture wars. But they were talking about how the TV show 60 Minutes had a segment about misinformation and about how the government should be allowed to censor free speech online. And so they were interviewing a, you know, in quotes, misinformation expert. I think just some person who really likes censorship. But anyways, it was a lady with kind of a short lesbianish haircut and glasses. And the Pirate Wires girl was like, oh, you can just tell by her physiognomy that, you know, she wants to censor. And then I think maybe it was Scott Adams who recently said that if you show people faces, pictures of faces, they can pick out who's gay with a, you know, not perfect, but better than random chance ability. Something about your gay face. People can see the physiognomy of it. And Wikipedia says, oh, it's a racist pseudoscience like phrenology or something. But anyways, I think it's fun. I'm going to try and fit it in here in the podcast at some point. Prison gangs. I mentioned them in a podcast recently, how the California gangs had the Southern Hispanics and the Northern Hispanics, and the whites were mobbed up with the Southern Hispanics. But that was all I could remember, so I went and refreshed my memory. So this was a rabbit hole I went down, looks like 4 years ago, and I was watching this guy on YouTube. His channel is called GP Penitentiary Life Wes Watson. And this is like a white guy in his 40s, incredibly muscular, covered in tattoos all the way up his neck. And he has his YouTube channel, which is talks about prison, tells stories. It's also self-help. It's like, if I had a drug problem and I got over it, I would never want to talk about it again. But I had a buddy, he had drug problems, he had them real bad, and he would go to jail, he would go to counseling a lot. Like, his dream was to become a drug counselor. Like, when he quit, if and when he ever got clean, he wanted a job where he was still talking about it. Still, I don't know, whatever. The answer is, he eventually overdosed. But I wanted to refresh myself on how the California prison system is, and so you get to go with me. And so this guy on YouTube, he was in prison probably 10 years ago, and he says that, first off, things may be different now. He only knows what he knows. And this is California. Different parts of the country are different. I did mention this. So in California, everything is divided and completely controlled by race. Other parts of the country are different. I think East Coast, you can have like prison gangs with half black and half white all in one gang. But in California, spending a few weeks in jail all the way up to life in prison, it's all done by gangs and race. And this Wes Watson guy, he estimated that the Woods, that's the white guys, they're the Pecker Woods, he thought that 85 to 95% of them were not racist, but that don't matter. You know, if you're white, you're automatically in with the Pecker Woods, and if there's a riot, you are automatically attacking, you know, quite possibly black people. So the biggest gang in California prison system is the Sereños, also known as the Southsiders and the Homies. And they're Mexican Americans from Southern California, Los Angeles, Orange County. And I'm going to talk about how Northern California Mexican Americans are a different gang. But the Sereños, the Homies, they wear red and they're into lowrider Chicano culture. And Wes Watson was saying there's parts of Orange County where every street will be a different Mexican American gang. You know, basically you got prison gangs and then you got the gangs outside of prison. That's different. And so they may be, every street is a different gang and you are killing each other. But when you're inside a prison, you're all of that gets just lumped into one Southsider Homie gang. And the Sereños are the majority, so they rule the yard. So Wes Watson, I'll call him Watson. He says that, you know, you may be the toughest person in the world, but he's never seen anyone who's so tough that they can take on four people at a time. And so, you know, if you're white and you think you're not going to be in the white gang, or black and not in the black gang, or whatever, you're about to find yourself in a one-on-four or worse fight, and you're just going to lose. So just, anyways, you don't have an option. And the Southsiders, they can come up with groups of four to kick people's ass easier because there's so many of them, so that's why they're in charge. Well, okay, so the Southern California Mexican Americans, they mob up, you know, hang out with, or in a prison riot, or on the side of, deal drugs to, whatever. They're with the paisas, which is like actual Mexicans or people from other countries, Colombia or something, and then the whites. And then the other group is the Norteños, which is the Northern California Mexican Americans, and those guys go along with the blacks and the others. Basically, I just wrote down a list of facts. But so the paisas, that's like the real Mexicans from Mexico and other countries, Guatemala, who knows what. And I guess in prison, you get a nickname. It's kind of like a superhero name. And so the paisas, their names are based on whatever town they're from in some foreign country. Like, I think Watson said he had a buddy named Tiwa. This was a guy who was from Tijuana. Then the whites, the Peckerwoods, they're part of the woodpile. 23, W is the 23rd letter. And so, I don't know, I think they get a lot of tattoos with 23. They're always talking about 23, 123. And then there's the Norteños, which I think means northern people in Spanish or something. And they wear red. So the Southern California Mexican Americans wear blue. The Northern California ones wear red. It's kind of like the Bloods and Crips. And the Norteños, they act black. They listen to rap. And Watson says they're the most militant group of all the gangs. I think, you know, some gangs, everyone does exactly what they're told and no one gets out of line and starts stupid stuff. And then other gangs, people are starting stupid stuff, doing, you know, just being dumb. And so the Norteños, they act black, and they also mob up with the blacks. And so the Mexican-American gangs, you drop your gang affiliation from the outside when you get with your gang inside. Anyways, the black people in prison, Bloods and Crips, they don't always drop their Bloods and Crips thing. So apparently they will fight amongst each other. And also, that's how riots get kicked off the most. I hate to say it, but I guess it makes sense. On the outside of prison, you know, who's known for rioting? Well, inside of prison, same group, known for rioting and starting riots. And then there's the others. Watson's like, I don't know why they're called the others. On the intake form, you list your race and then, you know, there's little check boxes. One of those checkboxes is other, so he thinks maybe that's how they got their name. But that's like Asians, Samoans, Middle Eastern. I mean, I don't think the prison is full of Asian gangbangers. But he says that for whatever reason, the Asian prisoners are always doing the most time. Like, they're always in for murder and they're doing just huge, you know, 35 years, stuff like that. He says he's never seen an Asian in for just a couple years. And he says they're also, like, the most calm and the nicest. And he says the most family-oriented. So I don't know exactly what that means in prison, but I don't know. I think you can just take your stereotypes from out of prison and take them into prison. Stereotypes are always true. And there's different levels of prisons. Higher number means more hardcore, or, you know, the prisoners have done worse crimes, in for longer. Anyways, 2, 3, 4. And he's saying that actually the lower number prisons are the more crazy ones. The higher number prisons, you know, maybe they keep you in your cell all day long and they have actual AR-15s. So if someone gets out of line, well, you just don't. And then the lower criminal prisons, the cops don't have rifles, and so it's harder for them to stop, you know, fights and riots. And so it's actually more dangerous for the prisoners. And he calls prison yards. And he says, different yards, different days. Sometimes maybe you could be nice to someone of another race, and sometimes you can't. So it just depends. And he's met good people and bad people of all, whatever, races and gangs. And then he was talking about the biggest riot that he was in. And so, I don't know if California still does this, but California prison system was overcrowded. So they started, like, opening up California prisons in other states. In this case, he was in Oklahoma. And it was a prison where the guards didn't have guns, and there was a 400-person riot. And the prisoners were in the chow hall, and a lot of times you can just cut in front, like, you know, if you're black, in this case, the story starts with a black guy. The group of blacks was further up in the line getting their food, and so he cut up to join the group, and normally that would be okay. But a homie, one of the Southern California prisoners, just decided he wasn't having it that day. And it sounds like in prison, you don't like bump chests and like, oh yeah, what are you gonna do? Oh, well, I'm gonna, you know, you don't, anyways, you just straight go to the fighting. There's no preamble. So the black guy cut in front of the homie. The homie's like, you think you're gonna cut in front of me? Boom, those two started fighting, and then everyone started fighting. Throwing trays, breaking broom handles in half and stabbing each other. The blacks are outnumbered by the homies, so there'd be like little locked up areas to keep equipment. And so they were like going and trying to get them, they would go into the lock up areas and lock the thing themselves. And the homies were trying to reach in with the broken broom handles to get them. I mean, I think everything I told you from this guy about the gangs and their names or whatever, that's all true. Who knows exactly about this prison riot, although it's a famous riot. He was playing some footage from it. But the footage is mostly from the outside as cops are like shooting tear gas into a building. You can't see it. But there was 400 prisoners. 185 of them got attempted murder charges. And he said everyone who got charged got a big, you know, 3-inch thick stack of papers that was everyone's charges. Like, you know, every person got to see exactly what everyone else did and was charged with. Kind of like the other prisoners could see, did you stand up for your gang or did you, you know, not put in work, as he calls it. And I went to the internet just to find some stats, just for the fun of it. I found a thing that was comparing California prisons from 1999 compared to 2017. And back in 99, there was lots of people in prison for drug crimes and property crimes. And now California prisons are almost exclusively violent crimes against other people. And this is before they legalized, you know, in quotes, theft in California. And maybe they'd already started legalizing drugs or anyways, they had switched their emphasis. I guess what to say about this is you don't hear this as much anymore. But you used to hear people say, oh, all these prisoners in for nonviolent drug offenses, we should let them out. Well, those people don't exist. Prison is full of violent people. Like Obama, I think, did let out every nonviolent drug offender from federal prisons, and it was just a teeny percentage of them all. And then the other stat I saw was that the age of prisoners is much older now. Well, I don't know. I don't have the numbers. Anyways, older. The prisoners are older. There's this thing called criminal menopause where, you know, people commit most of their crime from, you know, 13 to 35, and certainly not after 45. And so we really should be letting people out more when they're old, if nothing else, to save money. But I imagine the old people in the California prisons are ones who have been in there a long time. I mean, an Asian guy who's really nice with a 35-year sentence for murder, we should probably let that guy out. Let's talk politics. Kamala Harris has been acting like she's running for president lately. I think she did long sit-down interviews for the two channels I pay attention to, ABC and NBC. I think both times it was like a black woman reporter that interviewed her. She probably did it for the other networks too. But with Joe Biden being so old and how people feel about that, she is not your normal vice president. Normal vice presidents do not affect who wins. And probably she won't this time either, but she might. And it seems like she's kind of a single issue candidate running on abortion. And mifepristone, the so-called abortion pill, went in front of the Supreme Court, and even the conservatives sounded like they were going to keep it legal. Scott Adams was talking about that on his podcast. And he was saying something like, if mifepristone is made illegal, that will completely and utterly destroy the country. The destruction is because he thinks that's what will happen if the Democrats are in charge. He thinks, you know, this is it. It's all critical. And this abortion pill thing is going to make every single young woman in America vote Democrat forever. I should have grabbed a clip of him talking about it. He was like distraught. But we should get a ruling on that in June. And reminder, abortions are up since Roe v. Wade was overturned. So if you're pro-abortion, really, you should be voting for Donald Trump. And I looked up abortion by race just for fun. So these numbers come from 2019. So I'll tell you the numbers, then I'll put them into the context. But of abortions, 33% white, 38% black, 21% Hispanic, 7% other. But you got to compare that stuff to each race's proportion of the population. So whites get abortions about half as much as you would expect. Blacks get it three times as much. Hispanics and other get it as you would expect. And Robert F. Kennedy Jr. picked his vice president, a woman named Nicole Shanahan. I don't know where she gets that name. I think she's Singapore descent, which could be Chinese or Polynesian. I think she looks kind of Polynesian. She's definitely the most attractive vice presidential candidate ever. I mean, she's so hot, she's one of the Google founder's ex-wife. And I guess she paid for RFK Jr.'s Super Bowl ad. And she's just mobbed up hard with Silicon Valley. And a quick Google search for Nicole Shanahan net worth. We got $5 million, we got $70 million, and we got billionaire. So don't know. Is she going to pay for it herself, or she just has mega rich friends? But RFK Jr., right now he's trying to get on the ballot. He's not on the ballot. So to come in and spoil it for Biden, or possibly Trump, you got to be on the ballot first. And so people think you want a rich person on your side to get that done. I mean, normally you'd be triangulating, you need a woman, or you need a person of color, or in this case, a woman of color. Or a Polynesian, that's white adjacent. But I think for him, he just needs money. So hopefully he chose well. I guess he's kind of a gold digger. And this week, 538 had a podcast talking about, is Joe Biden making a comeback? Been here for years, rocking my peers. And the answer is, it's kind of too soon to tell, but he's been doing better this last month. He hasn't pulled ahead of Trump yet. I think Trump has been ahead for the last 3-4 months. So we'll see if Biden can pull ahead. Last election, Biden was ahead the entire 12 months leading up to the election. So we're going to see if there's any flip-flops this time around or if Trump can stay ahead the whole time. And I keep forget to give the election odds. So here's some numbers. These are from Thursday, close enough. Biden is at 48, Trump at 47, Kamala Harris at 5, RFK Jr. at 5, Gavin Newsom at 5. And then let's do the odds for Trump's vice president pick. This thing isn't right because I keep hearing people talk about J.D. Vance and he's not even on this list. But anyways, Tim Scott at 24, Kristi Noem at 22, Tulsi Gabbard at 13, Elise Stefanik at 10, Nikki Haley at 6. I guess what's crazy there is that Tulsi Gabbard, I don't think, was in the top 5 or even the top 10 until recently. And she's the only one who's anywhere close to being as attractive as Nicole Shanahan. Donald Trump went public with his social media company, Truth Social. And so apparently, Trump got kicked off of Twitter back in the day, and then he just wasn't online. And then a couple people, white men, who were on The Apprentice and didn't win at all, came to him and are like, hey, you're not on Twitter, let's start a Twitter alternative. And there's an open source thing that's like a clone of Twitter, so anyone can start their own version of Twitter. The thing might be called Mastodon, I don't know. You might have heard of like Blue Sky. That was supposed to be for all the good people who left Twitter. Anyways, they all have the same like code base. But basically it makes it cheap to start your own Twitter. You don't have to recreate Twitter from the ground up with expensive software engineers. And so normally tech companies go public with an IPO, initial public offering, where the company sells stock to raise money. They sell stock in themselves and then they get money and then they can use that money to grow is usually the idea. But this thing was a SPAC, S-P-A-C, not sure what it stands for. But I think it's kind of like you go find a company that's already listed on, in this case, NASDAQ, and then you just, your company takes them over and kind of wears them like a meat suit. But the SEC still has to approve everything like an IPO. I think maybe they wanted to go public a long time ago, but it's taken This is when the SEC finally gave him permission. And so I think Donald Trump owns most of the shares. I'm going to guess, 90% or something. The stock, it started out at $40 a share. On Saturday, it was at, I think, $65 a share, which puts its market cap at like $8 billion. And then that would mean Trump just got a free, I think that sounds to me like $7 billion. I don't know. I think I hear people saying, throwing around the words, the number $5 billion. So anyways, bunch of billions, more billions than he owns, more billions than he has, more than double probably his net worth, if he could truly turn that into cash, which he probably cannot. Well, and that would not counting taxes. But I think he has to wait 6 months before he can sell any of his own shares. And so Truth Social made like $5 million maybe in the last year. And so normally the way you would value a company is you multiply their revenue by 10 or maybe 20 if you think they're a hell of a good company. So that would mean maybe it's worth $100 million, not $8 billion. But people like Trump and it's fun. It's fun to buy some stock. I think the company is called like Trump Media and Technology Corporation or something, but it's DJT, Donald J. Trump, on NASDAQ. So like I say, it's trading at $65 a share. I went to Google. Like if you go to Google and type in Disney stock, it'll give you the stock price that day and some graphs and other numbers. So I went and typed in DJT stock, and Google came back with $16,000 a share. And I'm like, holy cow. But it turns out DJT on the New York Stock Exchange is Dow Jones Transportation, which whatever that is, it's very expensive per share. But so I don't hear people talking about this, but the question I had was how much money actually was bought? And it looks like $300 million worth of shares were bought in the SPAC. So, it's worth $8 billion. That's because they only sold a little bit of their shares, and when they sold them for $300 million, it's like people are saying, well, we'd give you $40 a share or $65 a share for all your other ones. But supply and demand, basically right now the supply is very, very small, and so the price is very, very high. If Donald Trump, dumps his 95% of all the shares that he owns or something, then supply and demand says the price would likely go way down. It's tricky to get out. It's tricky to, if like you're a founder of a company, it's hard to convert that into cash because when you sell it, it makes the price go down. But the All In podcast was talking about it, and the one guy was saying it was kind of like Bowie bonds. So David Bowie created these things called David Bowie bonds, 20 years ago. And he raised $55 million, and he said, you own my catalog of albums, and the revenue from selling those albums goes to pay the interest on the bonds. And then after 10 years, you get your money back. However bonds work, stocks and bonds, however bonds work. And in fact, everyone who bought Bowie bonds made out like a bandit. So the guy initially was like, that's kind of what's going on here with Trump, Trump's bigger than David Bowie, obviously. But anyways, that's not accurate. It'd be like if Trump had put like naming rights, if he'd put something, anything, if there's any part of Donald Trump in this, if you were buying a piece of Donald Trump, basically, then it would be like a David Bowie bond. But anyways, you're not getting any part of Donald Trump. He kept all that to himself. So maybe it's more like a trading card. Or a crypto coin. A Bitcoin has no particular value other than there's a limited supply of them and people are willing to pay a lot of money for them. So maybe each of the shares of stock in this company is like a thing you can collect. And maybe this is going to be the alternative that's going to take over from Twitter and Facebook, etc. But no one thinks that's going to happen. But to mention naming rights again, I think Donald Trump lets, oil barons in the Middle East build buildings and then put the word Trump on there and he charges them money for that. So he could add stuff to the company to make it more valuable like a Bowie bond in the future if he wants. He can kind of do what he wants. I don't know if he's the CEO or what. And the other thing is that, you know, there's all this lawfare, corrupt legal stuff going on against Trump, and they're trying to take $450 million from him in a New York case. And so maybe, you know, if you support Donald Trump and you wish he would have more money to help him get past that crazy judgment and, you know, whatever, stick it to the man, then buying shares in his company, it's a nice way to stick it to the man. And you get to gamble. I will say, you know, I pay $8 a month to Twitter. That's my political donation. I think free speech will, you know, maybe it'll get the Republicans in now. If they turn evil, it'll get the Democrats in after that. Whatever. I think, you know, I'm putting my money where free speech is. That's my political donation. You could put your political donation towards gambling on Donald Trump's social media site. And then the guys were talking about, well, it's overvalued. It's probably going to crash. Now, if you know that, or you're confident enough, you could short the stock. Basically bet that it will go down. But then they bring up the famous meme stock, GameStop, where, whatever, a bunch of people on Reddit started buying GameStop stock, driving it way through the roof like it shouldn't be worth that much. And then, like, some hedge fund was shorting it, and whatever, they put that hedge fund out of business. So, you know, just because this company shouldn't be worth a bunch of money doesn't mean you're guaranteed to make a bundle if you short it. You can, though. Thing to remember about shorting is there's basically a limit on how much money you can make when you do normal stock buying. There's no limit to the amount you can lose with shorting. And if people know you're shorting and they have enough money and they want to get you, they can. Or some quote from a guy on Reddit doing GameStop, and he's like, "We can remain stupid longer than you can remain solvent." I guess what I think is if Trump could get a $500 million out of this to cover all the legal BS, that would be cool. And then if he wins and he doesn't have to pay anything, he keeps the $500 million, and then that would be hilarious. I looked it up. Trump owns 60% of Truth Social. So that's how he has $5 billion out of the $8 billion. Check out these turkeys.
Anti-woke podcast. Anti-woke podcast.
Is the media losing power? Seems to be a weekly segment on here now. So I was listening to the latest episode of the Real Story podcast. It's made by the BBC. And the episode is called "Is Journalism in Crisis?" And they start off by going, "We've been doing this podcast for 10 years, and this is our last episode ever." And the number of people listening to podcasts and how many hours they listen to them, that goes up every year. But lately, there's been a big crash in mainstream media podcasts. You know, podcasts that require a whole crew of people who are not the people speaking. I know Spotify did a bunch of downsizing. NPR has added a lot of advertisements they didn't used to have. So that's probably an indication they're struggling. And then the BBC, maybe this is a one-off, or they're canceling their lower performing podcasts. But the real story is a panel discussion. And one of the people said there's a theory that people don't want political news, and the internet lets them avoid it. And I don't know, people wanted Trump news for like 4 years, but they don't seem to want it as much anymore, so it probably depends. And the BBC has a global outlook, or at least they're definitely talk more about Australia and UK, not just America. They don't seem to mention Canada. I think Canada is just America's North Dakota. And it's easy to imagine and find stats supporting young people doing other stuff. Like, you know, girls are doing TikTok, boys are playing video games. I saw Americans 18 to 29, 22% of them play like more than 13 hours of video games a week. So if that's just boys, you can double the 22 and get 44. So about half of men in their 20s are just playing tons of video games. I'm sure they don't have time for news. And TikTok is for girls, YouTube is for boys, you know, with whatever time is left over. You know, I was thinking, there's no right-wing version of a video news roundup. Like on YouTube, I can watch ABC World News Tonight, NBC Nightly News, PBS NewsHour. That's all corporate. And then the Young Turks and Philip DeFranco do a weekly news thing that just, you know, covers all the news. Covers, I don't know, maybe entertainment, politics, you know, sports if you care, business, whatever the set. Remember a newspaper used to have those sections? I mean, they don't actually cover sports, but you get the idea. There is no right-wing version of all that. I listened to the Morning Wire podcast, which does that, and it's right-wing, but that's like as close as it gets. They need to have a video version of the Morning Wire. I think it would blow up or whatever. There you go. If any listener, which they ain't, looking to make a bunch of money, you need a half-hour news roundup video thing, right-wing. I think it could be huge. You probably get picked up by the Daily Wire real quick and give it a big contract. And so I got this from Philip DeFranco, but Meta this week, they own Facebook and Instagram and WhatsApp. They said they're not going to be promoting political content and social content. Social commentary. Anyways, just call it political. They're not going to be promoting that going forward. So if your friend on Facebook posts something political, you'll still see that. But you're never going to get anything political from strangers ever again. And, you know, this is a left-wing show talking about it. So they showed a bunch of people complaining about it. It was like some Free Palestine street activist was like, you know, I get a bunch of internet clout from people finding me on Instagram who don't know me before. So, you know, you're cutting off my lifeline. Basically, there was a bunch of people complaining about it. It was all left-wing people. I mean, they've already, for a long time, they've suppressed right-wing stuff from reaching new people. So I think right-wingers are like, well, this doesn't affect me other than, haha, left-wingers, now we're all suppressed. One of the ladies on the BBC is like, you know, Facebook needs to promote mainstream left-wing news, you know, for the betterment of society. And I'm sure she believes that, and I'm sure she's unaware that Black Lives Matter has caused the murder of over 10,000 black people and many other left-wing conspiracy theories that the mainstream pushes. And like Jack Dorsey was the CEO of Twitter back in the day, and Mark Zuckerberg, he is the CEO of Meta and Facebook still. And like both of those guys used to say, I'm a free speech absolutist. And then they let their companies, you know, rig the election against Trump by suppressing speech. And the Twitter guy doesn't matter anymore because Elon bought that. But I don't think Mark Zuckerberg changed his opinion on free speech. I think he still supports it. So it's a little weird for him to control the company, suppress free speech, while personally supporting it. Like maybe this is kind of his, you know, even leveling the playing field. Plus, they just got tired of being falsely accused of pushing right-wing conspiracy theories. But Google, they still have a Google News thing. I looked up a bias on that. It was like 70% left-wing outlets, 5% right-wing, I guess the rest middle. And I haven't seen a quantification, but basically their search results are also, I would say, at least 70% left, 5% right also. But basically, so there is the narrative, TM. And it's pushed by the mainstream media, but it looks like the mainstream media kind of gets their power and has their power turned off by big tech. And Northern California, where those companies are, is super woke, so they push the same woke narrative. But now I guess Google is continuing to push the narrative. I mean, you get the same narrative, it's just instead of the Washington Post controlling the narrative, it's Google controlling the narrative. And now Facebook is turning off the narrative. There is no narrative from Facebook and Instagram, so I don't know what that means, but stuff is changing. Well, I went and did a search for Trump on TikTok, YouTube, and Facebook. And TikTok and YouTube just pushed a bunch of Trump derangement syndrome right at me. Like, TikTok must have some deal with CNN, because they don't do all things equally. They really give you a lot of CNN. And then Facebook, I don't know what it was giving me. It was giving me like clips from Trump rallies from, you know, 5 years ago. I should look at that more carefully. I don't know if like maybe all their news about Trump came from before January 6th or I don't know what was going on with them, but it wasn't a bunch of Trump derangement syndrome. It was just weird, but I could not tell what the narrative was, if there was one at all. And then someone mentioned that the power and the credibility of the media decreases as populism increases. Does one of those things cause the other? In which case, which direction? Or are they both caused by a third thing? I mean, you know, somewhere in there is internet, smartphones, social media, people can't afford to buy a house anymore. Well, okay, I'm just going to throw out a theory. I'm not saying I believe it, just so I can move on. People can't buy a house anymore, so that makes for populism like Trump and all sorts of European countries. And then the media is controlled by the powerful, and they hate the weak who can't buy a house, and so they burn the credibility attacking the weak. The powerful burn the credibility of the media to attack the weak. Don't look to your left, where you'll never be able to afford a house. Look to your right, where we call you a racist because you don't want to let a bunch of illegal immigrants in. But again, I really don't know. But there is, whatever, populism and media being untrusted, they do go together somehow. And this happened a while ago, but I guess Craigslist really put the hurt on newspapers. For some reason, newspapers were making tons of money with their want ads. Well, okay. I was thinking, you know, to list your garage sale or to sell your KitchenAid stand mixer for $50. I mean, there's no money in ads for that. I forget, newspapers used to charge maybe, you know, $3 or something. And like, you know, I never placed an ad in my life. It was too much trouble. But I don't know how much they charge for cars. I guess if you could get in the middle of selling cars and maybe charge people $100 to list their car or something, yeah, there might be some real money in that. And same with maybe houses. Anyways, and then Craigslist hit the internet, and that revenue source went away and just really put the hurt on them. And then there's this, well, so there's Facebook. That probably covers certain aspects of newspapers and media. But my woke buddy, he likes a website called Nextdoor. And I live in a small town. I think I tried to sign up for Nextdoor a while back. It was just, there wasn't anyone from my small town on the website, which makes the website useless. But just so I could talk about it now, I went and signed up again or checked it again. And there are a few people from my small town on Nextdoor.com. And it seems similar to Facebook. Like Facebook, you see your friends and your family, or you know, whoever you designate a friend. And then Nextdoor, you're like grouped in with people from your location. And I think there's like people talking about crime and, you know, local crime stories. But like I say, there's just, my town is too small. I didn't have, you know, there's like some lady, it was almost all just some lady who's like taking pictures of the snow or her dog or the creek is up. And there was like 6 items for sale. Whereas, you know, Facebook Marketplace has a ton of items for sale from my small town. Basically, Facebook needs to just swallow up Nextdoor or create a knockoff and put them out of business. Or maybe it already has one. I know there's apps for like New York City and crime, and just you can like see, don't go to that block, like, you know, in real time. Basically, I don't know much about this stuff, but it sounds like some of what the local news, you know, used to give you, they're starting to have an internet version for that too. And it doesn't seem to be pushing a narrative. I don't know if they have, you know, if you can say the N-word over and over on them or what. I mean, that's just my proxy for free speech. I would never say that unless I was testing out free speech. Well, and the big story this week in the media was NBC fired Ronna McDaniel after they hired her like 3 or 4 days earlier. And so McDaniel was the head of the RNC, basically the Republican Party. And Trump fired her and put in his daughter-in-law, but she is a Trump supporter. Ronna McDaniel is. And so NBC hired her. Like NBC owns MSNBC, which is the super far left, super woke thing. And then NBC is supposed to be the more neutral, have credibility. And like they have the show Meet the Press. I think Meet the Press is the oldest show on television continuously running. And so McDaniel was just going to be one of the people on a panel, you know, they'd talk about some political issue and then you'd have a left wing and a right wing perspective, I think was the idea. And so lots of shows do that. They'll be like, this person is the conservative perspective. But what they do, they don't ever have a Trump supporter. Like, that's outside the Overton window, which is basically like, so, you know, that's half of America. So the opinion of half of America cannot be represented at all on mainstream media. But they brought this lady in. She's not like a crazy hardcore Trump supporter. I think she's a very milquetoast weak Trump supporter. That was how she was chosen. But anyways, supporting him at all, that was too much. And just a bunch of the NBC employees on air were like, this won't stand. So they fired her. And it's good. It just shows that NBC News is not impartial at all. They're completely in the tank for the Democrats. And if someone is like, oh, you know, I don't believe you or prove it or you're lying. And so like, oh, here you go. Here's the proof. We have the proof finally. Smoking gun. And like I say, the only way to defeat your opponent today is for your opponent to go too far. And so I kind of think NBC went too far. This is going to, it's going to hurt the left and their mainstream media narrative stuff. That's what I think. I mean, we'll see. Basically, this has put a question into high relief. Does the mainstream media allow Trump supporters to speak, you know, on the TV? And before it was like, well, that's not even a question that we ask. I mean, you know, don't ask that question because of course they do. And now it's like, well, do they? And the answer is no, they don't. Basically, it puts an end to some gaslighting. The old story was they allow conservatives on there. It turns out that conservatives, all of them, every last one of them, just hate Donald Trump. The mainstream media has tons of voices from the left and the right, and they just happen to all hate Donald Trump because he's worse than Hitler. Anyways, now we know. No, they're just not allowing Trump supporters. So I think now, every time the mainstream media hires a conservative who hates Trump, everyone's going to be like, oh, we see what you're doing. Point it out on Twitter. Put pressure on them. You know, you can be a hypocrite, you can be a liar, but you can't pretend you're not a hypocritical liar while you go lying and hypocriting around. Trying to think of other things that are replacing mainstream media. It's like, hey, what am I doing right here? Oh yeah, podcast. So podcasts use a computer thing called an RSS feed. I don't really know exactly what that means, but it makes it somewhat decentralized. Like Spotify hosts my podcast because they're the only free one that I'm aware of. But if you have a website, I think you can put a podcast on there and then it will just appear somehow in people's podcatcher apps. And that's good because the elites can't censor counter-narrative podcasts. But it's bad because I think you can't make like a YouTube of podcasts. I mean, I'm not sure. I do it third world style, Android and not the Spotify app. I think I use something called Pocket Casts. And it can suggest podcast like channels or whatever to me, but I don't think it can really suggest individual episodes. There used to be a thing called Stitcher that kind of tried to do that. But I think if your podcast is on your personal website, then it makes it very difficult for anyone to tell, like, you know, most of your podcasts suck, but oh, that one you did is amazing. And so, you know, to push that out to all the people, put it front and center, like, you know, YouTube, if they get an amazing video, they can push it out. But just there isn't the same thing for podcasts. I was going to say it's technical, but really what it is, YouTube, they can only push out videos that are on YouTube. But because, you know, relatively speaking, all videos ever are basically just on YouTube, it means they can do it. I guess there needed to be a free podcast hosting platform 15 years ago. And if that had happened, we'd all be on that same one today. And it could be like YouTube, but that didn't happen. Which does level the playing field for the counter-narrative podcasts. So let me try and summarize to try and get it straight in my own head. So the media used to be three things. It was either like text or audio or video, you know. Newspapers, radio, TV. And now there's also social media, which is usually kind of a combination of all the stuff. So text, it's kind of like there's the New York Times, and then there's just individual people on social media. Like, the Times has gotten more powerful, but the rest of the newspapers are kind of going away. And then individual people are kind of doing the same thing on Twitter and Facebook, etc. And then they're hiring people. They're kind of, you know, becoming little companies to compete. And then you look at what happened with the Daily Wire. It's like, oh, we're a free speech thing. And then, oh, we're a big enough company now. Employees can't talk about certain things. It just, like, whatever. It's the whole story of a newspaper condensed down to a decade. That's kind of like the Daily Wire. And then radio, that narrative pushing is being replaced by podcasts. I'm not even going to talk about music. Maybe music is included in this stuff somehow. That's another form. But like the X-Files said, the truth is out there. It seems to me the truth is out there, and it's on podcasts. But I was guesstimating Joe Rogan's audience. I'm going to guess like 7 million. So, you know, he's as big as ABC World News Tonight. But he is by far the biggest podcast. There isn't a second thing like Joe Rogan that's equal to NBC News, or and a third one that's equal to CBS. So basically, the number of people who are getting the truth from podcasts is not that huge. But I guess they are kind of people who are higher up in a meritocracy. I mean, NPR puts out some of the most popular podcasts, but I would say the counter-narrative truth has basically beaten NPR. So audio, anti-woke wins. Yeah, so text, the narrative still wins, but it's getting closer. Audio, I think counter-narrative is one. And then video, I mean, that's YouTube, but that's also Disney Plus turning your kids gay, and Netflix pushing a bunch of DEI. And this is the biggest category, I think, by far. So the narrative is still winning with video. And there's not a lot the little guy can do on that. On the other hand, you know, a bunch of streaming services are like going out of business. I think Hulu just got merged into Disney Plus. Paramount Plus is trying to find a buyer. So they're all woke, but they're going, you know, they're going away. So that's how you win with video, is your opponent just disappears, but you can't really replace them. And then finally, YouTube is the big dog, and they're super woke. But Facebook and Instagram ain't no slouch, and they've just turned off the narrative. They're not counter, but they've turned it off. So I guess I'd say the narrative is winning, but boy, it is, you know, it was the narrative was winning, you know, 90 to 10 or something, and it ain't like that anymore. The little guy is coming up on them, and boy, if Twitter can get their act in gear with video, it'll really start changing stuff. Well, so, I haven't convinced myself, I have convinced myself. We haven't won yet, but we're doing good. Counter-narrative is doing good in pretty much all fronts. And then Joe Biden's going to win re-election and throw us all in prison. And the BBC people started talking about what they think's going to happen with AI and journalism and newspapers, I guess. And they were saying, AI will be useful for gathering information, but you'll need a person to interpret it, which I think means take the facts and then fit it into the narrative. And also, I think they're unaware that AI is more likely to go on an emotional crying jag than it is to, like, get math correct. At least the AI so far. But it made me think, if AI is writing the newspaper, or whatever, online, it could give you two versions. You could be like, give me a right-wing version of it, give me a left-wing version of it. And if they, you know, if someone put that out there, it'd be like, boom, there'd be two narratives. Wouldn't be able to stop it. You'd be able to ask for the narrative of your choice. Let's talk Ukraine. It's looking like Mike Johnson, the Republican in charge of the House of Representatives, is going to help the government send the money over to Ukraine finally. And he's under enormous pressure from the deep state and the donors that pay for politicians and the half of Republicans that hate Donald Trump. The Republican politicians, not the voters, who I don't think they really want to see money towards Ukraine. But he just passed a $1.2 trillion fund the government thing until October with the help of Democrats. So I think he'll just do the similar kind of thing with Ukraine. And some of the more hardcore Republicans said they're going to kick him out of his job if he does that. But, I mean, he could just fall on his sword. The government's funded. You know, everyone got their money, including Ukraine. And then maybe he's just like, now I can retire. That's kind of what Republicans in charge of the House end up doing. You know, they always do what the powerful want them to do. But then they can't stick around because the voters are like, hey, we didn't elect you for that. But there's hundreds of them, so, you know, you just swap one in and out every year or something. And on the ground, Ukraine has been blowing up big Navy ships of Russia's. And Russia has been bombing Ukrainian infrastructure. It sounds like maybe to ruin Ukraine's economy, at least for this little period here where America's not footing all the bills. And I imagine Ukraine's been using their jet skis full of explosives controlled by Elon Musk's Starlink satellite internet to take out the naval ships, but we haven't had video footage of these last few battles. And then Russia has been using something called a glide bomb. And then Russia has been destroying the infrastructure. I think they've been using some hypersonic missiles a little bit, which is kind of fancy. And they've also been using a bunch of glide bombs. So military stuff is in metric, like even American military stuff. Anyways, apparently 500 kilograms, 1,100 pounds is a standard size bomb. And these are just your standard dumb bombs that you drop. But they put on them these glide kits, which is basically like some wings. And I think if you drop them from high enough up, they can glide like 50 miles or something. And I'm not sure how guided they are. I think it depends on the glide kit. And before the war started, people thought that Russia would just go in and get air superiority. But they never were able to achieve that. But now it's looking like maybe they can do it. Maybe they can do it now. And so Ukraine is like, hey, America, what we really need is Patriot missiles. And I think those can shoot down airplanes and other missiles. And I was reading about them. So they got what's called the Patriot Missile Battery. And it has a bunch of big trucks. There's like a big truck, which is the command center, the big truck for the radar, several big trucks for the actual missiles. And the whole setup costs about $1.1 billion, I think. $400 million for the trucks. And $690 million for the missiles. And the missiles are about $4 million each. And so all those trucks and the missiles put together, you call that a Patriot Missile Battery. And it sounds like America has 50 Patriot Missile Batteries. So we can give Ukraine some of them, but we can't give them, you know, like 100 of them or something. And they're a billion each. I think we're going to give them $65 billion worth of stuff in this new bill if and when it passes. So I'm sure they'll be wishing they got more than they get, however much they get. And this other thing I read, America sells the most arms of any country, like by far. I think America was 40% of all arms sold each year. Number two was France at like 7%. Maybe Russia used to be higher up there, but sanctions something something, they're no longer in the top five, at least that I saw. Or maybe they were number five. But a question I've been having that I don't know the answer to is Ukraine paying domestic or import prices on the weapons? I mean, the money never leaves America. It goes from the taxpayer to the government to the army, which buys a bunch of new weapons. And they get the new weapons and keep them, and then they send their old weapons to Ukraine. So the only thing that goes to Ukraine is the weapons, at least on the weapon side. I mean, we also send cash, but that's separate. And when America sells weapons to other countries, we charge them like 2.5 to 4 times as much as our army pays. Like, it's famous that our army overpays fabulously for all the weapons and just gets the taxpayers getting ripped off at every turn. But apparently in foreign countries, I don't know if that's like Arab oil countries or something. Anyways, they pay like 4 times as much. So I don't know if we're giving Ukraine a discount or not. And the president of France, Macron, has been making sounds about boots on the ground, like NATO boots on the ground. And Germany and America are like, nah, we don't want to do that. But I was watching a YouTube video from Real Life Lore, who was talking about how France and Russia have a fight going on in Africa, like already. And in fact, I think they were kind of fighting before the Ukraine war. So it turns out France is closely connected to its former colonies in Africa. Like, I think, you know, when Britain left its colonies, it's like, we're getting the hell out of here. We don't ever want to see you again. Walk of shame. But there's this group of about five to 10 countries in West Africa and Central Africa that France has stayed close with. And they created this thing called the CFA franc, which was, you know, I think in French, you know, we say red house. I think they say house red. But anyway, CFA was something like colony France A franc. Franc is the dollar in France. And so all these countries, ever since maybe the 50s or the 60s, the currency they use is the CFA franc. And France created it, and they just pegged it to the French franc at, I think, 2 CFA francs equals 1 franc, or it did. Now it's at like 655. It doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. But now it's pegged exactly to the euro. So basically, it stops them from having inflation because they're not in control of their currency. It basically was the same. It was controlled by the French bank, and now it's controlled by the European Union bank. And this video I'm watching, like, you know, this is colonialism. This is terrible. This is so France could screw over these poor African countries. And you always hear that, and I'm like, huh, it would be funny if actually it really helped those African countries and they're doing good. Colonialism was good for them. But I went and looked some stuff up, and the answer is those countries are the same shithole countries as the countries around them who don't use the CFA franc. Basically, whatever the problem is in all those black African countries, it isn't the currency. Their problems start earlier on in the food chain. But so France has been kind of putting people in charge of various countries in Africa, and then lately there's been a lot of coups where they've been overthrowing the guys that France put in charge. And France was actually doing boots on the ground, kind of their own little Iraq or Afghanistan, that just like that they've been losing. And it's not just in one of the countries. Like, they'll start in one country and the war will end up 2 countries over. But these new governments that are kicking France out, they've been cozying up to Russia. In particular, the Wagner group that used to hear about them more. They've become a part of the Russian army now. But anyways, so the Russian army now is in a bunch of the former French countries or whatever. And so France and Russia, they both have boots on the ground. I don't think they actually fight each other. I think they send Africans at the other group. But I think they have been in the same country at the same time. And it's pissing France off. And one country in particular, Niger, which Niger is black in Latin, I think. I asked AI about that. It's like, don't be talking about the roots of Niger. But France gets uranium from Niger, and France has like 60 or 70% of their electricity comes from nuclear. Like, they are the country that gets their electricity from nuclear, and then they get their nuclear from Niger, and then Russia has kind of been propping up the government there, and that's pissing France off. So I don't even think France needs Ukraine to win. They just need Ukraine to take a bunch of Russia's attention away from Africa. That would be good for them. And so they're more gung-ho than the other NATO countries. Well, that's all for today. Links in the description, and thanks for listening.